Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's up, fellas? Welcome back to another episode of Combos Over Cold Brew with me, your host, Emma Abrahamson. Today we're talking to my friend Lucy Bartholomew, who is an Australian professional ultra slash trail runner. She's 24, so she's my age, and she's also a huge foodie, and we have a lot in common. And I thought it would be really cool to have her come on the podcast and share a little bit about trail running, because it's something I don't really know much about, and she's elite. Most notably in my mind, in 2018, she took third for females in the Western States, which you guys might be familiar with. But that's enough of me talking. Let's just get straight into the episode. All right, Lucy, welcome to the podcast. I'm excited to have you on. I don't think we've ever actually like talked face to face. So it's nice to finally connect via Zoom. How are you doing?
Yeah. Hey, Emma. Yeah, it's the first time I've actually gotten to speak to you, not through Instagram or through messages. But yeah, it's good. I'm in Australia. It's cold, but it is getting warmer and the days are getting longer. So it's the only way is up from here.
That's great. It's so funny to even think about that. I don't think about that often because our days are getting shorter and it's getting colder. So we're headed into the winter, you're headed into the summer, which is bizarre. My brain can't comprehend it. I don't think I've ever been anywhere that like has a change in season like that for me. It's like the opposite, so.
Yeah, and it's funny because I travel with the summers. So right now I would be coming back to Australia, but I would have not endured a winter. I would have been in America or in Europe. So to actually experience seasons this year for the first time in 6 years was, you can see I'm wearing three jumpers. So I haven't done well.
You haven't adjusted yet. No. Okay, to start the podcast, let's get a little rundown of who you are and what you're about.
Cool. So yeah, my name's Lucy Bartholomew. I'm 24 years old from Australia. I live in Melbourne. And I run ultra trail. So ultra distance, for those who don't know, is anything over a marathon. So anything over 42.2 kilometers, 26 miles, is considered an ultra. My kind of passion and my love for it is more around that 100 kilometer distance up to 100 miles, so up to 160 kilometers. And I ran my first 100K when I was 15 years old. So I've been at the sport for 9 years now, but I'm considered still the baby and will always be. And apart from that, I just love, I love community. I love just being outside. I just love sport. And pretty passionate about kind of plant-based eating, moving your body, and I guess just kind of enjoying life.
Yeah. I just can't even imagine running that long, that young. How did you get into it?
Yeah, so my dad. So he ran a lot of the Melbourne marathons. He's run a lot of road marathons. And he was getting older and getting slower. And he kind of, his solution to that was, I'll just go further. And then slowing down isn't that big a deal. And so we just kind of trained together. I would ride next to him, he'd run. And then as I got stronger and older, I ran. And he entered this 100K race in the Blue Mountains in Sydney, and he was terrified. And I went up with him at the age of 13. And I remember just waving him off from the start line and being like, well, what do I do for the next kind of God knows how long? And so I got all his stuff, put it in a backpack, and did what I'd been doing in training. And I just ran, and I ended up following the course, and I took a few shortcuts, but I got to a lot of the checkpoints before he did. And he was like, oh, Lucy, like the hills out there. And I was like, yeah, I went up them and I had all your shit in my backpack, and here I am, like, going to help you. And yeah. And at about 80 Ks, he said, you're not crossing the finish line with me, you know, like you've got to like just chill out, go have a shower and just meet me at the end. And yeah, when I finished that race, I was like, I got to find a 100K race that will let a young 15-year-old in. And yeah, I managed to find one that kind of said, you can enter the race as long as you run side by side with your dad. And so that's exactly what I did.
Oh my gosh, that's wild. Like, did you run, were you running before that, or was it just kind of like whatever, just training for with your dad alongside your dad, or did you do anything competitively before entering that race?
No, like I ran school cross country and school athletics because it's compulsory here, and that was kind of the 3K. And the 3K is, you know, not a popular event, especially for females. So I was kind of like, would get through to, I don't know what it is in America, but for us, it was just like the regional and then the state. But that's not, I think that's not as competitive as what it is in America. And then, yeah, like it was kind of like I ran because I knew I had to run. And then I played a lot of team sports, and running was the convenient thing to do when you didn't have any friends to throw a ball at. So I was just kind of, yeah, it was just the convenient fitness. But then I now just love the simplicity of it, is that, you know, you're doing triathlon training. That's the example of how hard and how much equipment and flat tires and goggles. Yeah, I know.
I don't want to talk about it. My wallet literally hates me. It's just the biking. The running is fine and the swimming is fine. Like, swimming is very minimal. I mean, I haven't even been swimming that much, so maybe that's also it. But the biking, man, like there's a reason why there's only usually older people in the sport, because you need money to do it. It's so expensive compared to running.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
It's wild. So I'm curious, like, what is a typical week of training like for you?
Yeah. It's not as probably as extensive as what people think. I think people look at ultra runners and they're like, man, you just must run all the time. And, you know, one, we don't run all the time, because in those distances, there's a lot of walking and you can practice that. And there's a lot of eating on the run, and it's just kind of like having a buffet in your backpack and going for a hike. We call that training in our sport. So a week for me is, you know, Monday is always a rest day. I'm very consistent with that. And then I run about 130 kilometers. I have no idea what that is in miles.
Someone can convert that.
Someone can convert that. And it's just made up of easy runs, but I have been starting with this whole lockdown. We've got a bit of a time restraint on how long we can be out, so I can't do the long, long runs. So instead, I've just been trying to do a bit of faster stuff, and it's a bit a lot flatter because it's just around where I live.
Nice. Okay, I just did the conversion. This is a rough conversion, I think. I think it's correct. It's about 60 miles a week.
Yeah, okay. Which, I, listening to your other podcasts, I listen to some of the others, and I'm, yeah, it's amazing how much people are running.
Yeah, but you're really like, I follow you on Strava, and you're like running, like the elevation gain is massive compared to what normal people are doing. Like, the professional road racers or track runners are not going, you know, thousands of feet of elevation every time they go running, and for hours too.
So, yeah, so I train off time more than distance. So yeah. I'm kind of like looking for that 10 to 11 hours at the moment. But having said that, I am did get into a race. Maybe I can do one race in 2020, which is 240 kilometers. Don't know what that is in miles either.
I'm in a converter right now.
That goes from the beach up to Australia's highest peak. And so I will need to increase. Yeah. I think your eyes say it all.
That's like 110 miles.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I can't even imagine. Like my longest run, I did the Chicago Marathon last year. And dude, my hips are just destroyed. Like, how do you run? How do you run for that long? That was like the number one question I got from anyone asking on the Instagram. How do you do it?
Yeah. And I have to say, you know, I followed your build up to that Chicago Marathon, and road marathoning is very, very different to trail running, you know, especially for your hips and your bones and your muscles, because you are moving in so many different directions with the roots and the rocks and the trees. You know, you're constantly changing, and it's a lot more forgiving to the body. I honestly think that, Emma, you would be an amazing ultra athlete. I know that you've got Sage Candidate already kind of writing on your YouTube saying that you need to collaborate.
Like Sage, dude, I fall every time I run on the trails. I don't know.
Yeah, no, we all fall.
Just a rite of passage, I guess.
It's absolutely, yeah. I think yeah, you know, how do you do it? It's one foot in front of the other. It's no different to road running. It's no different to track running. Ultra running is a mindset, and it's being comfortable in the fact that you're going to spend all day sweaty, tired, with some sore feet, and you're just going to be okay with that. You got to embrace it. And just, I think if you took your watch off and we went running and walking and eating together, you'd happily spend a day, because you've got that amazing mindset that you've shown through social media. And I think that's, I think that's all it takes to be an ultra runner.
Yeah. I just don't think I've ever gone on a run with like an ultra runner. It's like with, I don't know, maybe I go too fast when I'm running on the trails. I don't think I'm ever enjoying my trail running, and I always fall. Like, how often do you fall? Because I feel like maybe it's my bad knee lift. I can't tell. But I tend to always fall when I run on the trails.
Well, you know, it's super funny because you have this thing in ultra running called the ultra shuffle. And you can see it. I've developed it super young, because even when I was running the 3K track at school in my last year, everyone else, you know, the girls are in their underwear and bra and, you know, spikes and looking super fast and thin and whatever. And I was there, and I had still that ultra shuffle. And that's just like where you lift your foot, like the bare minimum to get it off the ground, swing it through, plant it. And it's just super efficient. I can do it for hundreds of kilometers, hundreds of miles. But on the track, you know, and I have this stupid little dinosaur hand when I run. I don't know why I have this claw. And so all these girls looking super strong. And there I was, like a little dinosaur in like shorts and my Solomon shoes, my trail shoes. And yeah, I was just like, wow, you know, I really made it. I'm looking good.
In style.
Yeah, in style. But the thing is, you just learn, you fall, you learn, you get back up. And I fell the other week on a run, and I was like, wow, I haven't fallen in so long. And it hurts so much to have to fall and get back up. And yeah, my knee is still recovering, but you'll get there, get better. You just need to keep going out there.
Yeah, I think, I definitely need to practice a little more, but it sounds like I already have what's it called? The ultra shuffle. Yeah, I already have it. I haven't even practiced for the ultra, and I think I've had it for years, at least since I've grown. Like, I don't think my stride length or knee lift has changed since I was like 5'2". So I just, my feet, I think they get 1 inch off the ground, you know? So if there's anything impeding that, that's where it just starts to tumble. Like, that's where I fall on the ground. So yeah, maybe I just need to go up on the trails and practice that a little more, but I'll probably fit right in, I'm assuming. So
we would love to have you, Emma.
Yeah, I'll just trying something new yet again. I should run in the trails more though, because it is really good for the joints, I will say.
Yes, yeah. And the mind.
It's nice to be out in nature. It makes all the difference. Like, running in the concrete jungle is just kind of, it gets rough after a while, man.
I don't know how you guys do it. You know, I see some people's runs on Strava and they're just these blocks, like real squares. And I just, you know, like, I need zigzags and I need a little bit of climbing, a little bit of descending, and not a lot of people and no cars.
Yeah. Are you better at like uphill running or downhill running? Because downhill running frightens me.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely not a downhill runner, especially in comparison to a lot of the athletes in the sport. Especially when you go onto trail, they get pretty technical on the downhills, and especially in Europe, not so much in America or Australia. But yeah, I'm more of like, I'm happy to grind up a hill and just kind of be that, like, I think I can train, you know, I'm just like diesel engine, I'll just grind all day. But yeah, I certainly don't like let loose on the downhills at all.
Do you find that you're like recovering on the downhills, or is it still like challenging?
No, I kind of use that as my recovery. Yeah, I'm like, well, the risk and the injury, like I'm just not, I'm not equipped enough to go hard on this, so I might as well recover so I can, when I get to something I can actually thrive on, I'll give it a little something. But at the same time, like with ultra running, you're not really like pushing and reserving energy. You're just kind of going slow and getting slower, you know.
Don't think it sounds so fun. Come on.
Hey, you get to eat along the way.
I'm in. I'm sold. Okay, questions about that. I got so many questions about fueling while running. My first experience of fueling while exercising, I was on the bike last year when I was training for the marathon, because I was like biking a lot to build up my base. And I could not consume food and bike at the same time because I was like panting. I've never eaten anything while running until last year for the marathon, because I never really had to. My longest run was like 11 miles in college. Most of the time you don't need to fuel for that if it's like 70 minutes or whatever I was running. But yeah, I'm like panting and like gasping for air, and it's not enjoyable. And at least it wasn't for me. But do you have any tips for people that are trying like to go longer on their runs and they have to fuel? How do you make it tolerable or enjoyable? Is it fun for you?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I'm probably not the best example of it. Like I ran, I have a bit of a logo associated with me, which is the watermelon. It's a picture of a watermelon. And the reason why is because I'm pretty known to that. I kind of just, my nutrition plan falls away and I'll run 100 kilometers just off watermelon, which is not enough calories. And that's what happened. Yeah.
What?
I did this 100K race in South Africa, and I got about, you know, 10 kilometers in, and about 60 mile race, and I was about 5 miles in, and my body was just like, no, we can't do gels today. We can't do food. And, so the only thing that I could eat, my stomach would take, was Coke, the drink, and obviously, and I don't know why I have to tell you.
Obviously.
And watermelon. And so I would run into checkpoints, and my crew would fill my 2 water bottles up with Coke, and then I would walk out with like a piece of watermelon in each hand, a few watermelon pieces in my backpack, because I had to take that for the next, you know, 10 miles into the next checkpoint. And all the photographers, that's all they took pictures of. And I came back to Australia and I was on national TV, and they said, you know, like, they said Lucy Bartholomew, and it didn't say who won Ultra Trail Cape Town 100K. It said Lucy Bartholomew, known for her excessive amounts of eating watermelon. And I just had this Instagram following just like double, and all these people were just interested in how much I ate of watermelon. And yeah, so the point of the story is you've got to find what works for you. And sometimes it's as simple as watermelon. Sometimes you can take sandwiches. You know, in America, I did a 100-mile race, and at one of the checkpoints, there is like quesadillas and pizzas and burritos, and it's like a buffet. And you walk in, because you're not running, it's 100 miles, you know, you're just kind of dawdling in.
Yeah.
And you can sit down and have a 3-course meal. So the difference between your example and my example is that you're running so hard that you're panting and unable to eat. Yeah, your body's gonna like shut off your stomach. We're not going that fast. So
okay.
We're like, yeah, we're ordering our pizza 2 aid stations back, picking it up, and then walking off with it into the wilderness and calling it race day, you know?
That sounds honestly ideal. Like, I could see the appeal of trail running now. Everyone's like, how? I'm like, why wouldn't I do this, you know? I can eat pizza and run at the same time. That's
exactly.
Ideal. So wait, how much watermelon did you eat?
I probably ate equivalent to 3 full watermelons that day, and probably like 3 or 4 liters of Coke. Yeah, my teeth hated me. Yeah.
How was your stomach okay? Like, weren't you super bloated, or did just like running and walking help de-bloat you as you ate it?
Yeah, it was fine. I think it was really just, you know, like watermelon's obviously a lot of hydration and Coke's a lot of fluid as well. And I was sweating so much in South Africa that it was just kind of like water and energy in, water and energy out. So I was, yeah, it wasn't a great thing to do. I bonked pretty hard at the end, but it got me to the end, and that was the main thing.
Yeah, I guess you just got to listen to your body then.
Yeah, I think so. A little bit. Fight it a little bit. Listen a little more.
Fight it a little bit. Fight the urge to only eat watermelon. Have you done it since, or is that a one and done kind of situation?
Well, then it became kind of my thing, and people started gifting me watermelons, you know, everywhere I went around the world. It was kind of like, oh, you've got to try the Spanish watermelon. Oh, in Mexico, we have a yellow watermelon. And I was just like, oh, like, I'm kind of done with the watermelon thing. Like,
the watermelon thing was
fruit?
Like a, can I change my fruit? I don't need any more, please.
Yeah, but then like I ran the 100 miles in America, Western States, which is in California in June, and it's really, really warm there. And it was kind of my fallback was watermelon, because it was really hydrating. Those canyons got up to, you know, 100 degrees Fahrenheit, and it was kind of that and what else did I eat? Pickles were kind of my two things.
Yeah, I mean, you need the salt. I can see why you would crave pickles as part of that.
Yeah,
but that's like no nutrition at all. They're like 5 calories or something.
Yeah, no. So like along the way, you know, I use Spring Energy as my gels. So they're an American based company for. They make like real food gels that are used with a base of rice, bananas, kind of like pureed baby food. Which my stomach is like, oh, cool, we eat a lot of like pureed food and fruits and stuff. Whereas other gels like made with maltodextrin and really, really syrupy, my stomach is just like, we never eat this except for race day. I don't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
And so I kind of learned that I'm better off, you know, using those Spring Energy gels, but they're kind of like, there's only so much kind of baby food texture you can eat before you're like, wow, poor babies, you know, this is not.
I feel bad for the kids out there, man. As you're running 100 miles, man, those babies eating this food, yikes. Yeah,
all those ones sitting down, hanging out, like, man, they got it bad.
Oh, that's funny. Okay, let's get into some more listener questions, because I know people, they want to pick your brain and they want to know more about ultra and trail racing, and you are an expert. I mean, I don't really know that much about the scene, so I want to hear too. To start off, what are some shoe recommendations that you have?
Yeah, cool. So I'm paid to say Salomon. So I'm going to say Salomon trail shoes. you know, I've worn them since I won my first pair when I was 15. So I've loved them for 8 years, and they've worked really well on the trails. You got to find what works for you. I know that, Emma, I think you've run in Hokas before. Is that right?
Yeah, I've run in Hokas before. I like them.
Yeah, so they make really good trail shoes that are really like forgiving for your feet. Salomon tend to go for more of the fast and light approach, which is for me is better. You know, I don't need a big drop in my feet, and that's really strong and really accustomed. But if you're new to the sport, the thing is in Hokas, you're definitely going to trip on shit, because they're very, very like wearing wedges, you know, like high heels.
They are. It's like running on a cloud. It's a thick sole.
Thick sole. Yeah. I think you just gotta find what works for you. Every foot's different. Everyone's gonna find different things. But it's really obviously very, very important that you find a good pair of shoes, because they're gonna be with you every step.
Yeah, that's a long way to go with uncomfortable shoes.
Yeah.
Do you think it's best to like go into a store and like try them out? Like, how do you think people could find good trail running shoes? Or is it just kind of trial and error? Like, you try a pair and you're like, oh, got a big blister, on to the next one.
Yeah, I think, you know, going into a store is definitely, I think, helpful, you know, but you're not going to know, because of the way that trail running isn't just repetitive motion. It's not like road running where every step is kind of the same. With trail running, you know, you do land on uneven rocks. You do kind of skid a little if you're going on a steep downhill, you know. If you're going to run in snow, then you're going to learn to slide on the shoes. So it's pretty, yeah, it's kind of something you can't be like, oh, I'm just going to try all these shoes. I'm just going to head up the mountain and slide down the snow, and then I'll let you know if I want to buy them or not. So yeah, you take a little risk, you know, and I think that you can definitely kind of find a lot of answers through looking at other athletes that wear them. Like the guy, Sage Cannavet, we were talking about before, he's a Hoka athlete and he's really, really good at talking about the shoes and what's available. And then I'm Solomon and I'm happy to kind of tell the difference between, because there's lots and lots of options out there, and Nike is the other one that's super, super popular. The Kygas, I know that people love those because they can kind of do road and trail, and it's not like I have to invest in a whole new pair of shoes, but I can have a hybrid that does both.
Yeah, that's interesting, because when people ask me for shoe recommendations, I just tell them to go to their store, because I mean, I wear Nikes and I love Nikes, but like you said, every foot is different. So it's hard to give a recommendation, but it's easy to tell someone to go to the store so that the people there can like look at their running gait and analysis, and you can like do the little test run on, I don't know, the 10 feet of surface area there is, or maybe like some stores have treadmills now, but it's different for trail running because you can't, like you said, just go up a mountain and see how it feels and return them when they're all dirty and roughed up. So that's interesting. What do you take on long solo runs? Like, what do you bring with you? Yeah.
So for a long solo run, if I always take my phone. So that's really, really important. Even if I don't have signal, I'll still just have it with me. Other things I take is food and water. And if I don't know the route, then I take excessive amounts of both of those things. If I do, then I can kind of, you know, I know where I can pick up water and how much I'm going to need. If I'm going to the mountains, I take like a jacket, a rain jacket, I'll take a thermal, you know, it's all very, very kind of depends where you're going, what kind of year it is, what's the season. And yeah, like in Australia, I mean, we have, you know, every animal wants to kill you is what they say. So kind of taking, yeah, you should come visit.
Yeah, that sounds inviting.
Yeah. So we have, you know, like snake bandages, which are just, yeah, you have snakes. I don't know why we have bandages, but it's really just a bandage. But which is good in case you roll your ankle. Like there's just so much that can happen and you're very inaccessible when you're on the trails. So you just have to be completely self-sufficient, but also have your backup plans. Like if things happen, you need to, know how to get out of there and what you can do. So yeah, you know, in my backpack, I usually take like 500 a liter of water, whatever that is in your metrics.
I don't know. I have no clue. I need to go back to science class.
Yeah, this is, I feel like people are going to be listening to this and being like, I have no idea what she's talking about. Snake bandage, what? But yeah, you know, some first aid, a jacket, some food, some water, and you're pretty good to go. A map if you're going to get lost. Yeah.
Man, you must be quite the adventurer.
Yeah, well, you've got a backpack in this sport, so you've got to get strong, holding quite a bit of gear. So you kind of, yeah, you're like a little explorer.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. What's the, okay, yeah. This is a question from a listener, aka Emma Abrahamson. What is the scariest thing that you've like encountered on one of your runs or races?
So I, in America, I ran into a bear.
oh no.
Like, yeah, and that was kind of, it was so exciting to me, more than scary. I was just like, oh, I finally got to see one. But then it was kind of, what do I do? You know, like, and that was a really, really cool but really scary experience. So that's probably my animal one. And then probably the craziest thing was I was running in Norway and I was running down this ski slope and I slipped onto my bum, which I knew was kind of like something you could do and people did. And I got to the bottom of the ski slope and I could feel my my leg like tingling. And I looked up the ski slope and I saw a red blood line of the whole way that I'd just gone down. And I lifted up my shorts and I'd severed and frozen off. I got third degree burns down to the bone of my on my ass cheek, and I ended up, but I couldn't feel it because everything was frozen. And so I just ran back to the car and got, you know, went back to my hotel and I was like, oh, it's fine, I'll sleep it off, you know, like I'll be right. And then in the middle of the night my leg just went like totally nuts. And I ended up, like, I was so dehydrated from the burn that I took my bed cover, which was stuck to my butt, and walked to the pharmacy at 1 a.m. in the morning, which was obviously closed, and slept outside the pharmacy with my blanket stuck to my butt. And then
I'm sorry, keep going.
And then the pharmacist came to open up the store and found this Australian girl with, like, yeah, half a butt cheek missing, and it took me to hospital. And
are you okay?
Yeah, I mean, it's one way to take a few inches off your bum. I don't recommend it, but it was probably the scariest thing. Like, yeah, aside from an animal or running into someone or something, having to deal with that in a foreign country was probably the scariest thing I've done.
Oh my gosh. Was anyone, like, with you, or did you tell anyone, hey, my butt cheek is frozen off or extremely bloody? Well,
I was meant to race and I ended up not racing, and I had them, like, the race directors visited the hospital where I was, and it was just kind of like one of those things where you're just like, wow, this is so embarrassing. Like, I now have to travel to Greece to meet my mom, and I'm sitting on the airplane with, like, a donut cushion to lift my ass cheek off the seat with, like, a diaper that wraps up to my torso, and every time I need to go to the toilet, I need to, like, slice it down the side and rewrap. So it's like, yeah, it's
that sounds like wow. A painful and a really bad, like, recovery process. Did it take you a while to recover from that?
Yeah, it was. Well, it took me a while. I don't know if I fully have full feeling back. Like, if I fell on it, I don't know if I would be certain areas. I don't think there's any nerves anymore. But I mean, I went to Greece and I ended up, they were like, oh, you know, don't get it in salt water and don't let it see the sun. And I was like, I'm in Greece. Like, this is not going to be good. But I ended up going into the sea with it, and I felt like the seawater just, like, totally, like, burnt like hell when I went in, but it came out the other side. And I was like, I think this is really good for it.
Okay. There you go. You're finding what works.
Don't take that advice though. Yeah.
Please, no one listen to that advice, but it worked for you, but that's it.
Yeah.
Okay. Next question. What is you? Okay. Whoa. I'm all over the place, but you probably travel the most out of anyone I follow on Instagram. What is your favorite place that you've traveled? I feel like you're always on the move.
Yeah, I do. I'm only home normally in Australia for about 2 to 3 months of the year. My favorite place that I've traveled to would be probably South Africa. I loved Cape Town where I was, and I think that their culture and the sea, the mountains, they've got it all. Like, you can run in the morning, surf in the evenings, amazing fruit, and just really, really kind people. I think it gets a bit of a bad rap, especially for females, traveling there alone, but I have nothing but amazing things to say about it.
Man, your Instagram inspires me. I need to be more of a traveler. I always, like, stay within the States just because I get nervous for, like, world traveling. I don't, probably just from what people say, but I think I need to be a little more independent and sort of in that sort of thing. Have you had any scary travel experiences?
Not ones that, like, I haven't personally put myself into that position. And that's because, you know, when I first started, I was traveling around with not a whole lot of money, and, you know, I wasn't really sponsored. I was just kind of, like, given some shoes, which shoes doesn't pay for accommodation. So, you know, I'd come sometimes take the bus somewhere and sleep at, you know, a bus stop or, like, whatever. It's a glamorous life of ultra running. But I remember I took the bus into Annecy in France, which is a beautiful town, very, very expensive. And I had a meeting or something the next day, but I had one night where I didn't have any accommodation. I didn't know anyone. And so I kind of just, like, sat at this bus stop and or this tourist info center that was closed, and this homeless guy came up. And anyway, you know, when you just kind of, you make this assumption on someone based on what they look like and how dirty their fingernails are. And we ended up sat and we just chatted, and I ended up buying him some McDonald's, and we sat there and all night. And I just felt so much more comfortable having, you know, a guy around and just kind of not being alone. And he was just kind of like, you know, I ended up in Annecy too. And it's just, I've stayed here, but continued this lifestyle. And that was kind of like, a real eye-opening thing of, you know, you got to sometimes give people the chance. And yeah, a lot of my experiences traveling have just been of like, we create a lot of scenarios in our head, which will stop us traveling and stop us enjoying these things, when actually it's never as bad as what we think.
Yeah. That's crazy. That's like awesome. I want to be inspired by you and that sort of thing. I mean, I am, but I want to actually take action on it and go and travel.
Come travel with me.
I literally would. We should. Once the coronavirus situation gets a little better, we'll talk more. But
definitely.
I definitely want to. I'm going to take you up on that. Okay. Next listener question. How do you fuel before, after, and during a run? Well, you kind of already talked about during. So how do you fuel before and after?
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't think it's any different to running on the road or the track. I think, you know, you just have like oatmeal seems to be kind of like the standard answer. Two pieces of toast with a banana and peanut butter seems to be the other answer. You know, I kind of train a lot of my runs fasted. I don't eat before I run, purely out of convenience for myself to not have to get up. But I'm also really aware and becoming increasingly more aware of kind of what the implications of that can be for some people. I don't seem to have the problems of, you know, the hormones and kind of, you know, it's an intuitive thing. And if you're just doing it because you're trying not to eat as much and you think that's better for your running, then that's a different case. I'm just, you know, I'm lazy, I'm content, and I'm fine to run for an hour or two without anything. And then after running, gosh, you know, anything. Like, I really love a smoothie bowl. I think it's the best way to get like ample nutrients in to, especially eating a plant-based diet, you're kind of just wanting to get as many nutrients as you can in, and lots of nuts and seeds and cereals and, fruits and veggies. And yeah, kind of, I don't know. I think that nutrition is something that people are so fascinated in. And I just recently released an ebook, which is on my website, of there's about 80 recipes in there. And I think it's like, when I was typing up the recipes, I was like, man, hummus, that's not really a recipe. Like, come on, Lucy. And then people just like, it's just so easy to make, you know, like, and I was like, wow, okay, like really, we can go back, like let's just scale it back to the basics, you know. And I think that like your recipes are amazing because they're not using like Amazonian 70-year-old chia seeds that you need to find and source and pay thousands of dollars for. It's like, no, pumpkin puree, some peanut butter, some oats, and you've got, you know, your fall addiction thing that you like. And I just think especially plant-based eating gets a bad rap for being either really, really expensive, really, really inconvenient, or really like non-versatile, like it's just salad. I don't eat any different than what probably Emma eats. And I just want convenience, I want cheap, I want tasty, and I want to be full.
Yeah. It is crazy how people think eating a plant-based diet is more expensive than eating like the normal traditional whatever diet, Western standard American diet or whatever. But from times where I've been like fully, mostly plant-based, it's been the least expensive, like the least expensive grocery trips. Because once you just go to the basics and you're just eating basically fresh produce. I never really go organic because I don't want to spend that extra money. I like to be on a budget. That's where it gets pricey, because you can't make like a vegan diet really expensive if you go for the Amazonian whatever and the all organic produce, or like the specialty products that are packaged and are marketed to you at a high price. But if you stick to the basics and you go produce and like, basically I shop in the bulk bins a lot of the time. Just like seeds, nuts, oats, it can be pretty inexpensive. So I recommend giving it a shot, or just limiting the amount of packaged food that you buy, because that's where it starts to add up. I can just tell in my own grocery shopping.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, like there's two ways to be vegan, right? And there's ultra plant-based, and there's the rice, potatoes, cabbage, like carrots, you know, like they're considered peasant foods because that's what they gave like the slaves of the world. That was kind of the cheapest way to feed them, was like bags of oats or whatever. And then, but then there's now these new things that are just like, oh, you can have fermented falafel balls that have been sitting in, you know, in Colombia for 6 years to ferment and become the best thing for you, and they're going to make you thrive. And it's just like, well, that's a load of shit. Like, honestly, you know, I just want to eat falafels. I don't really care where they've, like, how many years they've been fermenting and aging. It's not a cheese, all right? It's not going to get any better.
It's not a cheese.
So, like, yeah, you know, it's just, it's as simple as you want to make it. It's like anything. You can make running super complicated. You can make it heart rate based and numbers based and trying to be and all these amazing things. But at the end of the day, running is running. It's one foot in front of the other. And then recovery is the same thing. You know, like, people have these guns that shoot into their muscles. They have these pants that blow up around them. They have, you know, like, all these things. And it's like, you know, the best runners in Kenya, they don't have all those things. They just use their body as their tool and they just stretch and do what they feel is best. So same with eating. Again, they're not eating the fermented falafel balls. They're eating rice and beans most of the time.
Man, I love that comparison. I've never even really thought of it like that, but it's so true. Like, especially if you're a beginner to any of it, whether that's running, eating, or recovery, keeping it simple makes all the difference. Because I feel like if you overcomplicate it, you're going to be less likely to stick with it. And a lot of running and recovery and nutrition is about consistency. Like, you're not going to see results unless you consistently do it and don't give up after a week when it gets confusing or hard. So I like that comparison that you made with recovery and running. That's awesome. And go check out Lucy's ebook. Do you have a hummus recipe in there or a falafel recipe? You have the hummus. What about falafel?
I do. Well, it's kind of like a lot of the recipes kind of start. It's kind of like a zero waste book where if you make something like the dal recipe, the next kind of three or four pages a way to reinvent that. Because I'm aware that, like, a lot of people, whether that be parents or athletes, make something as meal prep. And then by the end of the week, they're like, dear Lord, do not serve me dal. And so the idea is that, like, okay, you've got a bit of dal left. You can, like, turn the page. You can turn that dal into, like, falafel burgers or balls just by simply adding maybe, like, one or two ingredients. And you've got a completely different meal. And it just means that, like, yeah, you can kind of make something and be like, this can turn, dal can turn into burgers, falafel balls, it can turn into a shepherd's pie, it can turn into a jacket potato, it can turn into, you know, da 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 da. And it's just like, maybe it gives it new life every time.
That's awesome. Man, I can't wait to make some of those recipes. That's going to be really exciting. For sure going to go on the food Instagram.
I'm looking forward to One Crazed Foodies cookbook.
Oh, don't get me started.
Get
it's
it
coming.
Here.
It's coming. It'll arrive at some point. It's TBD though. We'll see. Okay, a couple more questions before we conclude. So, how do you structure your weekly training? Like, do you have a coach?
Yeah, so I'm coached by an American coach, David Roach. Their training company is called Some Work All Play, and he coaches some of the best, most of the best actually, in the ultra world. And he's just someone who, he writes a lot for Trail Runner Mag, and he's kind of like a very holistic coach where he thinks a lot about, yeah, you've got to run, you've got to train, but also you've got to be happy, you've got to be stoked, you've got to be consistent, and you've got to rest. You know, that stress plus rest equals growth. And I think a lot of people miss the whole resting bit. You know, we all want to stress our bodies, we want to run hard, we want to be fast. But, you know, like, rest is rest. And the only way you can rest is sitting down, chilling out. Resting is not, you know, having a hard day at work. It's not missing sleep. It's not, like, you know, there's just, he's just very kind of like, Mondays is your rest day. Don't do anything, you know, like, don't think that, oh, okay, I'll go swim 3 kilometers in the pool. That's not a rest for you. Like, that is hard for me. It might be easy for you. but yeah, so he kind of just structures, he's just like, Monday is your rest day. You know, Tuesday is an easy run and just kind of warming the body back up for the week. Wednesday is your workout day. Thursday is like an easy long run. Friday is just the short, easy day. It's called like a glamorized rest day. So you just run like six miles. And then Saturday and Sunday are kind of like long days with maybe a little workout in there. But it's all just like you got to find what you can do consistently and like do the basics really well. And like the basics can be just lacing up and going easy out the door and just kind of enjoying running for what it is.
Yeah. What's an example of a workout that you do?
Yeah. So like, last week I did, so it's a 3 mile warm up.
People know what 5K is.
But yeah, but like my coach writes in miles. So even I convert what he says to me and I put it into my watch in kilometers and I give it back to him in miles. So it's a 3 mile warm up. And then it was 3 by 10 minutes with a 4 minute recovery. And then 3 by 1 minute on, 2 minutes off. And then 3 mile cool down. So it comes to like 22, 23 Ks, just over a half marathon of work. Yeah.
I guess that's not that different than what road runners do, but it's just on trails. It's just completely different setting. But
yeah. And then we just back up like the next day is kind of like a 20 mile long run.
It's just a 20 mile long run. Each their own, man. I don't know.
You'll be joining us one day.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm excited. I'm lacing up my trail shoes right now. In your first few ultras, what percentages would you think is running and what percentage is walking?
Well, I mean, it depends where your ultras are. You know, if my first 100K was along the beach or along the coastline, so it was pretty flat and we ran most of that way. And that was kind of 12 hours of just kind of jogging. And then the only time we'd walk was when we had food through the aid stations. But, you know, like in a race, like in France, in the European Alps, you know, I did this 120 kilometer race and it has, I don't know this in feet, but 7,000 meters of up and down. And it took 13 hours. And for that, of the 120 kilometers, I probably walked 50 kilometers. So like just under half, because the hills are so steep, they're so long. And it's just about consistency, you know, like from the get go, you know, people walk off the start lines on some of these races because they're like, you know, there's just no need to kind of exert yourself. You let's just ease into this and then ease out of it because yeah, we're never gasping. Well, we shouldn't be.
Yeah. Are you gasping at the end? Like, do you make a final surge to that line?
I haven't really. Like, there's only been kind of like a few races where I've had to like sprint to like make up a position. I remember doing a race in Chamonix in France and was coming down the final 8 kilometers of switchbacks, like all downhill. And I could see this little Russian. She has red hair, really bright. And I could see her switchbacking a few in front of me. And she looked so much closer than she was because of the zigzags. But actually, I think she was like a kilometer or so. But we ended up coming into town together. And the train barriers went down because a train was coming through and she stopped for the train. I was like, I'm not stopping for a train. If I stop, I'm not going to be able to start again. So I ducked under the barriers and then we had this little, then she ducked under too. And we had this little fight with this, like the train crossing warden being like, guys,
sorry, we're busy.
Yeah, I was like, hello, we're 80Ks done. I'm getting to that finish line.
So who won? Who won the Duke?
I did.
Okay, yeah, that's what we like to see. Sorry to the other girl if you're listening. She has no idea who I am. Okay, two more questions. How do you stay entertained or stop focusing on the pain during ultra runs?
Yeah, first of all, pain's probably, you know, like pain is, there's two types of pain. Pain that you should be feeling and you should recognize and that should maybe lead to you stopping or slowing or adjusting. And then there is pain of just like, wow, this is just really long and really like boring and repetitive and like that's kind of painful in a way. For me, you know, sometimes it's music, sometimes it's a podcast. Like I think I can proudly say I've listened to all your podcasts now.
Oh my gosh. I'm honored.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a lot of times.
Yeah, you do.
I think I went through like 3 or 4 of yours in one go. Just kind
of that's a lot of my
voice. Yeah, I was like, oh, it's Edward again.
Oh, this girl again. All right.
No, it was great. Very entertaining. So kind of podcasts and music are something you can do if you really want to pull yourself out of the present moment. But for me, you know, time really does pass. And I think that's the most important thing to remember with ultra running and with probably just running in general, is like there's moments where you feel shit and things hurt and times suck and it seems like a really long way. But everything passes and everything moves on. And, you know, within a few moments you can be, oh, this is the best thing ever. I love running. I'm so strong. I'm so empowered. And I think that sometimes it's best not to like plug something into your ears, but instead just to kind of like focus on where you are, what you're doing, why you're doing it, how amazing it is that you have the freedom and the ability to put shoes on and to go for this run and to sign up. You know, for me, I travel so much and I'm running in places that are so just kind of, I never thought I'd get to, that, yeah, it's just like, wow. Like, even if this is a little painful because it's a long way, it's still like one of the best things. And I'll look back on this and be like, wow, you know, this didn't suck because of the pain. It was awesome because of the opportunity.
Oh my gosh, Lucy, you're so inspiring. You literally inspire me. I run with music every single run. I almost never run without music unless I'm running with a friend. But I have a hard time doing it without it. The only time I really do is during races, which is weird. I should probably train myself to not. I just love listening to music, but I should experience the world a little more.
I was running this morning and I ran for 10 miles and I went out and I, you know, when you just like, you know, a run's going to feel long kind of in the first few minutes, you're like, oh, are we there yet?
That happened to me yesterday.
And I started doing this thing. I've been doing it for a few years now, but I do it on and off, where I just breathe in and out my nose. So you close your mouth and you just breathe in and out, and it really slows you down, but also makes you really focus on just kind of like your breathing. And I find it, and it's really nice because at the moment people don't really want to talk to you because of COVID. So you don't have to worry about like having a conversation with someone or like smiling at them because people's wearing masks and don't see you. And I just think it's such a nice way to kind of like really become in tune with your body, because you're listening to your breath, like you're just trying to breathe in and out. You're trying to stay, slows you down. Yeah. But like, that's perfect on an easy day. And it's one of my favorite things to do, just kind of like zone in on me and just like have control over something. And then you just like looking around and you're like, this isn't so bad. You know, this is 90 minutes of my life that is just like, just about me and my breathing, and no one cares what I do.
That's so funny, because I feel like the reason that I'm like force myself to listen to music. I don't force myself. I like listening to music.
Because you don't want
to
hear the breathing.
Because I don't hear my breathing. And I can't, the thing is, I can't listen to podcasts on runs because I don't like to hear my breath. I like, my breath needs to be toned out, because maybe I'm breathing too hard. Maybe I'm going too fast on my runs. I can't tell. But there's something, I probably am. Honestly, I think that's it. But I'm panting. And every time there's that gap between songs and I like hear myself gasping for air, I'm like, no, next, please, next song.
No, and that's the thing, right? Like, you know, you can never do your easy runs easy enough. And I was the same, like when I was kind of coming back into, I had a bit of a tough year last year, and I was the same thing. I just did not want to hear my footsteps. I didn't want to hear my breath. I didn't want to, like, I was just so like, oh, Lucy, you sound so heavy. And oh, Lucy, like you're breathing so hard and you're going so slow. And I had all these judgments. And it's having that ability to change your mindset of like, wow, like I'm taking all these steps and my body is coping through all of that. And all those breaths are like, they're super, super special. You know, we're so lucky that we have the ability and the opportunity to go and breathe hard for an hour or whatever. But I think instead of like putting myself down for all those things and being like, ugh, like Lucy, you're disgusting. Like, look at that. You know, instead of being like, wow, Lucy, you're doing it. And whatever that looks like, you know, in my reality and in someone else's reality, because we all think that we're breathing a lot harder than we are, and that we're sounding a lot heavier, and we look a little bit less professional than we should. you know, if someone else is probably driving by going, heck yeah, look at that. That's awesome. That's so cool. I'm going to get out there. And yeah, it's just kind of, I think you should really challenge yourself this week to run without music and just kind of appreciate it is for what it is.
I'm literally going to do that. I'm going to go run in the trails this week and I'm going to run without music and I'm going to be perfect. In tune with my breath, my body, outside world, my feet.
Yep. Lift your feet a little bit.
Lift my feet for sure. Okay. Last question to close out the podcast. What is like your long-term what's your long-term goal with running?
You know, I don't really know. I think I just want to keep it in my life. I want to keep it consistent. I don't want to do what I did kind of going back into 2018, 2019, where I kind of took running for a little bit of granted and outran my love of running, which is something that I always said, like, if I ever stopped loving it, I would stop doing it. But it's amazing how you can kind of lose sight of whether you're really loving it or whether you're just, this is your routine. Yes.
I relate to that very hard.
Yeah. And I think it's amazing that women are speaking, or women and men, but especially females are speaking about it because it is so common. So I think, yeah, like that's probably the area that I'm super interested in is, you know, that kind of, you know, having that self-love for it. And that's why putting out the ebook was kind of like the recipe book was just kind of like, you know, self-love comes in forms of movement. It comes in forms of nourishment. It comes in forms of connection and like being aware of the people you follow. Like I follow on Instagram, I think about 50 people and it's because those 50 people are people that add to my life and they give me something. And someone like you, Emma, is, you know, I never met you, but I received messages from you and I've spoken to you and we've WhatsApped. And, you know, it's kind of like, that's what I want to give to the running world is like just that perspective of like, it is not everything. You are not your results. You know, I've had great successes. I've also had really big failures. And when I had the successes, people were like, oh, have you made it? Like, how has your life changed? I can tell you, it hasn't changed at all. You know, like still go home. I still struggle with self-image. I still struggle with trolls online. I still, you know, like still all these things. I'm 24 years old. Like, give me a break. And so, yeah, I think with running, I just want to be, you know, something in the sport that is just like, everyone just hold your horses and just realize that like running is not the thing at the top of the main thing in life. On your gravestone is not going to be your results. You know, you got to realize that, yeah, it's a cool thing. It's a sport. It's a community, but there is so much more out there. And yeah, people like you are the good people to be following.
I mean, you as well. Like, I feel like you are kind of my spirit animal. All right. We haven't even met in person, but I feel like we share so many of the same thoughts about running. I mean, what you said is basically kind of how I want to experience the running world moving forward is just enjoying it, taking it for what it is, not overthinking it and putting too much pressure on the results and just spreading positivity in terms of the running and the overall running experience. So I really enjoyed chatting with you today. I'm glad that I got you to come on and it's been very insightful for me learning more about ultra running. I'm sure a lot of people listening as well, but where can people find you? Because I'm sure they want to follow you. They want to buy your ebook filled with so many good recipes.
Yeah. So I'm mainly on Instagram, Lucy_Bartholomew. And I'm not going to spell that, but you can find it.
it's pretty easy.
Okay, cool. And then my website is where you can buy the ebook, or it's the link in my bio on Instagram. I am on Facebook, but it's pretty much a copy and paste of what goes on Instagram. So you don't really need to see it twice. And then I'm on Strava is the other way. If you really want to see what the training looks like and how slow we do go, that's the place to find it.
Yeah, you're popping on Strava. You're popular on there.
Yeah, I think people are just like, why? Why do you run so much?
All the good content. Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on. This has been really fun.
Yeah, likewise, Emma. And like I said, you know, like, and what I've said to you previously is I would love to share a run with you on the trails to get you maybe inside the ultra running world. But you know, like, I think that something like the camps, like, I've put on a few camps, and I think that you would be an amazing leader at some of those camps for females especially, and just kind of merging those worlds of, like, you're a track runner and I'm an ultra runner. Like, people seem to think they're separate spaces, and they're not, you know.
Yeah, let's make them one.
Yeah, let's put it together.
Yeah, running. Let's do it.
A bit of walking and eating.
Even better.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, to close out the podcast, can we get a good old peace out, fellas?
Oh, I've been waiting for this whole podcast. All right. Peace out, fellas.
Thank you guys so much for listening to today's episode of Combos Over Cold Brew. I had a great time with Lucy. She's literally my spirit animal. Even though we've never met in person, I feel like we have so much in common. Thank you to Charles J for supporting the podcast. I give one of my supporters a shout out in each episode. So if you want to support, it's just through the Anchor platform. It's super easy. The link is in the show notes. Follow Combos Over Cold Brew on Instagram if you want some input. Usually I ask if the listeners have any questions before I record the episode. Also, if you want to support the podcast for free, it means a lot to me when you rate and review the podcast. It helps grow it organically, and I just love to hear your feedback. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll hear from you guys in the next one. Peace out, fellas.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.